Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Go For It. I'm your host, Paul Gann, alongside Jeremy Espy. And for the next 2 hours, we will be talking sports and having fun doing it. I want all your ideas, all your opinions, and all your beliefs. And, of course, as always, you will get a heavy dose of our opinion. If you have an opinion, a number to call, 646-727-3070. That's 646-727-3070. You can listen to the show at blogtalkradio.com/PGANT. That's blogtalkradio.com/PGANT. And you can send messages to the show on Twitter at GoForItGANT. Make sure you do that and make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForItGANT. Big show lined up for you today. Expected to be joined by Steelers defensive back Ryan Mundy. Ryan played last night against the Washington Redskins, and Ryan's going to join us today. Expected to be joined by one of the stars of Ultimate Merger 2, MMA fighter Kevin Casey, and Kevin's going to talk about the show, and Kevin's going to talk about his mixed martial arts career moving forward. Also, expected to be joined by free agent linebacker Abdul Hodge, who played last season with the Carolina Panthers. And also, those of you who are fans of Animal Planets, Hillbilly Hand Fishing, Skipper Bivens, and Jackson will stop on by and talk about hand fishing. I know it sounds crazy. I know it sounds a little odd, but they're going to talk about it. And so we're going to be joined by them later in the 2 o'clock hour. Make sure you stick around. This is going to be a good show, as always. And it's been a long time since we said this. But, Jeremy, how are you today?
You know, I'm well, and it looks like the troops are recuperating, you know, so we're hanging tough. We bought our Backstreet Boys, you know. New Kids on the Block. You know, we're hanging.
New Kids
up
on the Block. Yes.
Hanging tough.
But and you know, we haven't talked to you in a while, Jeremy, and I'm kind of interested to get your take on some of these free agent moves that have been going on in the NFL, and one place to start is in Philadelphia. You have the dream team, as Vince Young called it, the dream team in Philadelphia. You sign Nnamdi Asomugha. You bring in a Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie. You bring in a Jason Babin. You bring in a Ronnie Brown. You bring in a Vince Young. You bring in a Cullen Jenkins. You bring in a lot of pieces. You bring in a lot of pieces into an already good situation in Philadelphia. Granted, there were holes on that defensive side of the ball. But you brought in more pieces. And I forgot, Steve Smith from the New York Giants, who was a Pro Bowl 2 seasons ago, coming off microfracture surgery. So we don't know. It's looking like he'll be back in October. But Jeremy, Philadelphia, is it truly a dream team situation?
Well, no. I mean, we talked about this. No. Look, I think actually the pieces they added, I'll tell you, I mean, the guy I think everyone is in love with is Nnamdi, and I think that was huge. I think they got value in a way for Cobb, but when you look at now, ultimately the problem is going to wind up being that Asante Samuels, you certainly don't want to not get value for him in terms of a trade. Because you are, in a way, stuck with the fact that, well, you basically traded Cobb for 1 year and a second-round draft pick. Because at the end of the season, Cromartie is a free agent. So if the Eagles make a deal there, they're not going to be able to make a deal. They can't make a deal with everybody. They got offensive players up the gut, you know, Gazoo here, that they have to start making deals with. DeSean Jackson needs a deal. Michael Vick needs a deal. LaShawn Jackson is soon to need a deal, so they have offensive pieces to worry about. I think where they actually did really well, and it was the last player that you said, they got him on the cheap, and they got him for a 1-year deal, and that's T. Smith. I mean, Steve Smith has been a force in his first few seasons in the NFL, and was maturing into a great receiver. And if nothing else, I mean, he was an Eagle killer for many seasons, you know, out there. And for the fact that the Eagles have now, you know, locked him up where the Giants do not have him, that was a big move. That was a nice little move there for the Eagles. I can't say you and I were kind of going back and forth. I think they certainly addressed the defensive line more so with Colin Jenkins, I think, than with Jason Babin. I think he's a reach. A good player can certainly, you know, be a
so you're saying a one-year wonder type of situation.
Well, I mean, I think ultimately that it smells like that. You know what I mean? When you pick that rag up and you smell it, I mean, that's what you should be smelling is a one-year wonder. Anyone that's going to come in and say, oh no, you know, we see this or we see that, I got to ask how that happened, how you're able to see other more things than what the eye is seeing, which is, listen, the Eagles let Babin go. I mean, certainly under Jim Washburn, he had, you know, a pretty good continuation of his career, and certainly last year had a good year on a talented, you know, on a semi-talented defense, I guess. But the other thing, the big problem I think the Eagles are going to deal with is they have no linebackers. I mean, you make me laugh when you talk about Casey Matthews. I mean, 3 years ago,
Jamar Chaney coming back, Keem Jordan also in the mix.
Man, I'm sure all these people are well known throughout the NFL. I mean, get it real, Paul. The Eagles, who were used to, especially in the glory days of that defense, they are always known with several key linebackers. They haven't had a key linebacker. They haven't had a good linebacker, Paul, in too long.
It's been a long time. It's been a long time. I guess you can
and
go back to the days of
inconsistent.
I guess the days of Trotter. I know when he was at a high level, I guess you can go back to those days in terms of linebackers. But, I mean, in terms of linebackers, you're talking Jamar Chaney, you're talking Casey Matthews, and you're talking Moses Fokou. I mean, names that don't necessarily scare you. They don't really scare you too much. But, I mean, in terms of linebacker play, and I heard somebody say this, and can you name the five linebackers in the NFC? Can you name five very good linebackers in the NFC? And you think about it, it doesn't necessarily come to your head right away. It takes a little time to come to your head right away. You'll throw an Errol Locker, Patrick Willis, maybe a Jonathan Vilma out there. You throw a few names like that out there, but it doesn't necessarily come to you right away. So, yes, they knew. Is there some question marks with the linebacking position? I would definitely say yes, definitely. Definitely.
But it ultimately means it's the defense, too. I mean, you and I will agree, Paul. I mean, that's a bigger – that's a more, you know, a more macro point, because that's – what I say to that is the bigger issue there is that's a defense to me now that you have to now start to look at and say, are we looking at a defense that, you know, on paper looks like you know, Vince Young said, a dream team? Because – Paul, we haven't even talked about the fact that other than they addressed an offensive lineman in the draft, they really, Paul, they didn't really address the offensive line. I think the other key addition they had, they made two really, really, I think, strong additions. One, as I said, I definitely think the addition of Steve Smith was a wise move. And the other one actually was off on the offensive, and that's Ronnie Brown. I think they brought in, you know, Ronnie Brown's been very established in the league, and Steve Smith is just establishing himself. I think they're the two, besides Nnamdi. I think certainly Nnamdi's going to walk in and have, I would suspect, probably another Pro Bowl or Pro Bowl-esque type season. That being said, to me, Paul, you have, I look at it and I would say you have some grave concerns, you know, around the defense and ultimately on the offensive line. They still don't have a fullback.
Owen Schmidt, I think, filled in very well for Leonard Weaver last year. And I'm okay with the fullback position. Running back again, in general, I'm okay with. Offensive line, there are some questions. I mean, Ryan Harris, he will be protected. Michael Vick's blind side. But the left side of the line looks pretty good with Harriman's and Jason Peters. Danny Watkins hopefully can come in and contribute. The guard position is not as hard to learn as the tackle position, so maybe he can come in and contribute. I mean, I'm not saying this is a dream team by no stretch of the imagination. I mean, you still have Jeremy Maclin in that uncertain situation. Still not sure what's going on with him in terms of his mysterious illness. So, you know, there's some uncertainty there. And like you said, the offensive line, again, there is some uncertainty there. And the linebacking position, there is some uncertainty there as well. But I think you can look at any roster around the league and you can see the same thing. There's going to be holes somewhere. There's going to be teams that don't have everything patched up. But, I mean, you know, if it's good enough, then that's what you're shooting for in a certain respect. I mean, it's not a dream team, definitely not a dream team with the Philadelphia Eagles, but it's a very good team and a team on paper that you have to say is in big-time contention and definitely a team that's going to be – you're going to have to watch out for. And
And Lurie said it best. You know, Lurie, I give Jeffrey Lurie a lot of credit in the State of the Eagles Union address. He said that they put this team together because of the Packers. They feel like this team gives them the best chance to beat the Packers. And I can't say I disagree. That's ultimately because you look at this Packers team. Sure, they lost. You know, the loss of Collins will hurt, but they certainly still have the entire, you know, the offense is intact, and certainly they don't look as if things there aren't going to change that much. I think only
some may say it's an up. They have an upgrade now, bringing back a Jermichael Finley. Granted, he's coming off a serious knee injury, and also bringing back Ryan Grant coming off a foot injury. So you know, there's two upgrades there. I mean, that was a team. A lot of people tend to forget that was a team that had 16 players on IR last season. 16 players on IR, and that's big. That's big, and they found a way to put in pieces here, there, and everywhere. And I want to go switch gears real quickly with you now. A lot of injuries going on, and we talked about the Packers last season, 16 players on IR. You know, we have right now, you have 10 players so far who have went down with Achilles injuries. And, you know, a few other players going down with other injuries. You're going to have a lot of injuries this season. So, in terms of depth, that's going to be very important for a ball club now. Because expect injuries. I mean, you cram all this stuff in, expect a lot of injuries. And you had a lot of injuries so far, like I said, in terms of training camp and all. And with the like I said, the Achilles things going on, the Achilles situation that's going on around the league, you're going to need depth. You're definitely going to need depth. And what are your thoughts on some of these injuries going on right now? I mean, it's kind of crazy, but it's kind of expected.
Well, and actually, I mean, I think if nothing else should, if you are Chris Johnson sitting at home, I mean, nothing else should be the proof that you don't walk into camp without a new contract. And it certainly be expected. I think what you're seeing is, and actually I think it's a precursor to, I hate to say this, but the new NFL. And what I mean there is with less OTAs, with less OTAs, basically with less practice, more goes to the overall player. There are certainly players who, you know, there's long been told they take 2-3 weeks in the off season and they're right back to work. To them, it's a full time job. But there's plenty of players who, you know, will say, "Oh, you know what? I'm gonna start next week, and then after next week, it's next week, and after next week, it's next week." And you know, it's like that song, you know, after the party, there's the after party, and after the party, there's the after party. And so if you're a player and you're not really looking at this over the next now 10 years with no opt out in a new collective bargaining agreement, there's going to be a lot of, I think, surprises. People walking into camp who said they were training, but were they really training?
Right. And you, like I talked about this a few times, but you had the Bryant McKinney situation. tackle for the Minnesota Vikings. I mean, came into camp nearly 400 pounds. And I think that's a byproduct of the lockout. And not to switch sports, but if you look at the NBA lockout, you remember many moons ago, you had guys like Sean Kemp, who was never the same after the lockout, guys like Vin Baker, who was never the same after the lockout. Never the same. I mean, the guys just let themselves go, and Sean Kemp and Vin Baker were never the same player after that situation. I mean, not to say it's going to be, we're going to see a lot of that here, but I mean, just two examples of guys where, you know, who were essentially casualties of the lockout. And, you know, you look at it, and it's kind of a sad situation. But, Jeremy, I want to switch to some other free agent moves, and I want you to kind of comment on this Kevin Cobb situation. 5 years, $63 million, 22, which is guaranteed. A lot of money for a guy who's 3-4 as a starter. A lot of money for a guy, 11 touchdowns, 14 interceptions in his career. A lot of money for that guy. I mean, I don't really know what Kevin Cobb is at this point in his career. And I don't know if he's a franchise quarterback at this point. I don't think anybody really truly knows Arizona. I guess they really truly know because they made the investment, second-round draft pick, in a very good corner in Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie, and a whole heck of a lot of money. Is Kevin Cobb and will Kevin Cobb live up 5 years, $63 million, 22 guaranteed?
Well, I mean, you're asking – that's a tough question. I mean, I'm going to say I'll put myself on a limb, and I always go, I think, with the answer, which is no. And I think the reason that is because if he was going to live up to it, he would have done it in Philadelphia. And what I mean by that is, sure, I mean, basically you have to look at this and say, now, is he going to have a better career than the second half of Michael Vick's career? And he couldn't beat Michael Vick out. And so what that says is that I think he's a good quarterback. There's absolutely no question about that. But I also think that, you know, I don't believe he's that good of a quarterback. I think if Andy Reid couldn't have believed, if Andy Reid doesn't believe in you, I think that's telling you something. We talked about this last year, Paul, with all due respect. You know, we were saying a lot when your boy, and I know you mourned this for years, now, but when he let go of Donovan McNabb, you and I even both said, you know, maybe Andy knows something that not everyone else knows. And lo and behold, the end is here for Donovan, whether he wants to admit it or not.
Well, the first year, Andy Reid definitely knew something. We'll see what happens in Minnesota. I mean, a better situation, I think, for Donovan.
Worse.
I think it's a better situation. I mean, you have a legitimate run game and arguably the best running back in football, Adrian Peterson.
That's the offense.
That's an upgrade. That's an upgrade. Upgrade. Hopefully the offensive line will come around. But you have the best running back in Adrian Peterson. So you have a run game. So you come out with a run game at least. You do miss Sidney Rice. That's big. Sidney Rice is gone. That's big. That's definitely big, but you do have a Percy Harmon who's still around. Bernard Berrien, you have some pieces there. But, I mean, I think this is a good move for Donovan. And hopefully the Minnesota defense can play a lot better than they played last season. Jared Allen can get back to playing Jared Allen type of football. And hopefully that can help the Minnesota Vikings kind of get back to where they were a couple seasons ago. And, you know, I mean, what are your thoughts on that Donovan move? My thoughts is, again, it's a good situation for Donovan, but this is his last chance. If he doesn't make good here, he can forget about, I think, getting a starting job ever in his career. And I think if he doesn't make good here, I think his next move, if he wants to stick around and stay in the NFL, is as a backup holding the clipboard with a hat on.
Right. Well, I'm going to tell you right now, and I just tried to say it, but you were a little bit on the rant there, on the roll. I'm going to tell you, the offensive line, that was the same offensive line, Paul, that got Brett Favre. They retired Brett Favre. So if you're Don McNabb, sure, you're working with Adrian Peterson, but don't forget, so was Brett Favre. And let's say that, and that's why I say, getting back to, you know, to Kevin Cobb, Andy Reid felt like, basically, taking the gamble in the huge upside, either way, of a Michael Vick or a Kevin Cobb was a better answer for than Donovan McNabb. And then this year, he, you know, with all due respect, Paul, they could have towed the line, kept Cobb, even gave him a little bit of an extension or a reach on a contract and franchise Vic, and then, you know, at another year to see how this was all going to shake out. The fact he doesn't do this kind of stuff, to me, I think you look at that and you have to start to say, wow, you know, if you're going to look at the talent, you know, abilities of Andy Reid, he had this guy. For him to let him go, to me, says he must know something that, sure, he's a good player, but is he going to be, you know, a great player? And I think the answer to that was probably no.
And we'll see, and I think that's a fair point there that you bring up. Could it be a byproduct of, yes, you know, no? It also could be a byproduct of knowing that Michael Vick is going to be Michael Vick of last season. It's also a byproduct of saying, you know what, I got to get value where I can get value. And Kevin Cobb can get me value, and that value meaning Dominic Rodgers-Cromartie, and that value meaning a second-round draft pick. Could it be that as well? I mean, maybe he's thinking, maybe he doesn't believe that Kevin Cobb is a franchise quarterback, but it doesn't mean he doesn't think Kevin Cobb will be a good quarterback. I just think he believes that what he has is better than Michael Vick. But I was personally for keeping Kevin Cobb on the roster because of the uncertainty of Michael Vick and the way his health. I mean, the thing is, Michael Vick, because of his style, he takes some hits, and thus it's hard for him. He has not been through a 16-game season. So he hasn't played a full 16-game season. So looking at that, I was in favor of keeping Kevin Cobb. But at the same time, you do bring in a decent backup in Vince Young, a guy who 30-17 as a starter, a guy who's proven one thing in this league, that he is somewhat of a winner. And so, you know, you do replace Kevin Cobb with Vince Young, and that's not a bad replacement. Some would say, I mean, you really look at it on paper, Vince Young has more of a pedigree than Kevin Cobb in this league. I mean, Kevin Cobb is 3-4 as a starter. Vince Young is 30-17 as a starter and has led his team to the playoffs. So some would say that you actually upgraded the backup position with Vince Young. I'm not so sure of that, but some could make that argument, and we'll see how it shakes out. Hopefully Vince Young doesn't see the field if you're a Philadelphia Eagles fan. Hopefully.
Well, I mean, I think it's a reach to say at this point, I think the big thing with Vince Young, I think he's saying the right things because he's worried about his money. His record is on paper is impressive. But I have to say, Paul, the fact that, again, there's a coach in Jeff Fisher that couldn't beat out Terry Collins. That says more to me than his record does.
Well, yeah. But, and also, Paul, you have to look at him and Jeff Fisher really truly didn't get along, and they had their issues as well. But Vince Young was a starter going into week one, and then you're pulled halfway through a game in week one. I mean, that's not really showing a lot of faith in you as a starter. And so that wasn't a good situation for VY. But I just think, I mean, this is a good situation. I love the move for Vince Young, and I love the move for the Philadelphia Eagles. Because one thing you know about the Philadelphia Eagles and Andy Reid, Marty Mordenweg, and those boys, those guys know how to coach up quarterbacks. Donovan McNabb, Michael Vick, Kevin Cobb. And so you look at Vince Young, this is a great opportunity for him to kind of be in the background. And kind of, he's not the starter now, so he's in the background. Not as much pressure. This will give him an opportunity to kind of learn from Andy, learn from Marty, even learn from Michael Vick, and kind of get himself right. So when he's ready to go back out and be a starter in this league, he'll be more prepared. So I think this is a great move for Vince. I think it's a great move for the Philadelphia Eagles. And some would argue that this is an upgrade. This is an upgrade over Kevin Cobb. And the records would tell you that, yes, on paper, this is an upgrade over Kevin Cobb. We'll see going forward what happens there in this whole situation. I want to move to Tim Tebow now. And a lot of stuff going on with Tim Tebow, Kyle Orton. And if you remember in the offseason, you got the sense that John Elway, John Fox were essentially giving the job to Tim Tebow as the starting quarterback in Denver. And you got the sense that Kyle Orton was supposed to be traded. There was a lot of talk that he was supposed to be traded to Miami. It didn't happen. Now Kyle Orton's in camp, and he's essentially beaten out Tim Tebow to this point and is the number one guy in Denver. Tim Tebow is the backup listed as number two on the depth chart. But I look at this whole situation, and I say this about Tim Tebow, and I'll give my thoughts before Jeremy gives his, but I'll say this about Tim Tebow. This is a guy to me that his ceiling is a backup to a wildcat quarterback. He's nothing more than that. He'll never be any more than that. And I said this a few days ago, and I'll say the same thing. If Tim, I would walk my daughter down the aisle to marry a guy like Tim Tebow, but I would not hand the keys of my franchise to this guy. I wouldn't give this guy the keys to my franchise. Tim Tebow, to me, ceiling is a backup to wildcat quarterback. That's all he'll ever be to me. What do you think about Tim Tebow?
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head, and the best part is when you really look at around the NFL, who's really in love with this guy? Just watch watch NFL Countdown or watch Fox or NBC. It's all the former coaches. I mean, Herm Edwards loves him, and that's because I think if you're a coach, this is the guy that you started to you want to coach. Here's a guy in Florida who was a very impressive player. He sacrificed his body, down after down after down. He was a strong, strong guy, strong quarterback. He certainly had the collegiate athletic prowess as a runner to impress people as a running back. I mean, the sad part is about this guy in the NFL, if he was a little taller or if he had a little of something more, he could be another position other than, quarterback. The only really other place to put him is in the slot and as a slot receiver, but I just don't think that politically when you're drafted in the first round as a quarterback, that doesn't happen. So what does that mean? In my opinion, the Broncos made a mistake. They could have used him the way Cordell Stewart was used as these, these scat players, because I think you used the right word, which is wildcat. And I think, unfortunately, he's not the prototypical NFL quarterback. He's more of a, if you look at guys that have good careers, that are smaller in stature, he doesn't have the arm strength, and right now he doesn't have the mechanics of a clean quarterback to come into the league and start and certainly beat off a guy in Kyle Orton, who is no Pro Bowler himself, but the difference between Orton and Tebow, I think there's really no debate. Orton will outplay a Tim Tebow 100 out of 100 times, not 99 out of 100, 100 out of 100. I mean, Tebow, I think as an athlete, again, more athletic, but as a pure quarterback and right now, and Orton's only going to get better, and I think Tebow can certainly get better, but I do think fundamentally, and I mean this, fundamentally, you're in the wrong situation if you're Tim Tebow at quarterback. I think if you look at what you want to do, you want to either be a backup. And the thing about most of these backups, Paul, you know as well, with the injuries, there's always if you're a good backup, you're getting a chance to start in the NFL.
Let's bring in a caller. Hello, you're on Go For It. Hello, you're on Go For It.
All we hear about that defense, they can't stop a nosebleed. 25th in the league, and we're the one to get disrespected. Congratulations. See you in Pittsburgh. Can't wait.
Hello, you're on Go For It.
Sound like he was in the 700 section in Pittsburgh.
Well, I guess I guess we have some Bart Scott fans out there. I am a non-believer of the New York Jets. If you want to, I am a non-believer of the New York Jets. I'm a non-believer of Mark Sanchez. I'm a non-believer at this point.
Actually,
I'm not a believer.
You and I, we know that. Certainly, I liked Sanchez. I liked them last year, and that's an interesting team. I mean, they lost the Braylon Edwards, but they pick up a Plexico Burress, and they certainly sign Moss, but they basically they lost as people well know they lost Nnamdi. It was pretty well told after the fact that Eagles kind of snapped him up. What do you see? How do you see the Plexico Burress signing impacting them?
Well, I think if Plaxico, first of all, if he can just stay healthy, I think it's a good signing. I mean, is it an upgrade over Braylon Edwards? I'm not really too sure about that. But, I mean, it was obvious they couldn't afford Braylon and Santonio Holmes, so they had to pick one of the two. And so I personally would have been in favor. I like the Plaxico move, but if he's healthy, it's a great move. If he's not, then, you know, you're missing out there. But they did bring in Derek Mason and Jericho Cotri, a guy that I thought is a very good player, a guy that he asked for to be released and was released, and ultimately he signed with the Pittsburgh Steelers. But they did bring in Derek Mason, and that, I think, kind of band-aids that situation a little bit. But, I mean, if I look at the New York Jets, I think the big person they lost and is Brad Smith. And I tweeted this when Brad Smith signed with Buffalo. He is a guy that they're going to miss. They are going to miss Brad Smith. He played Wildcat quarterback for him at times. He did it all, kickoff returns, played little receiver. I mean, the guy was a multifaceted, multidimensional player and a guy who did a lot for the New York Jets. He did a lot for the New York Jets. But, I mean, I think that's a guy they're going to miss. But, again, we'll see what happens with the New York Jets. I mean, Sean Ellis is going a guy that they may also miss. So, I mean, we'll see what happens with the New York Jets. But, I mean, they don't have a big-time pass rush, if you look at them. Don't have that big-time pass rush. And that could be big. But they do have Revis, and they do have a lot of Bart Scott, a lot of pieces on the defensive side of football. They bring in a Muhammad Wilkerson from Temple University, a guy that they're very high on. But I look at the New York Jets, and I think the Patriots did more. I think the Patriots did more. And speaking of the Patriots, they bring in a Chad Ochocinco. They bring in a Albert Haynesworth. And do these guys conform and do these guys do it the Patriot way? I think Ochocinco and Haynesworth will do it the Patriot way because, again, this is their last opportunity, I think, to be relevant in terms of football, to be relevant in terms of being on a championship type of team. And so do these guys conform? I think they do. I think they do, and I think these are great moves for the New England Patriots. And I think this team, they upgraded. They definitely have upgraded. And I think going into, you know, they had some issues on the defensive side of football last season. They definitely had some issues on the defensive side of football, and it cost them moving forward and going forward, you know, against the Jets in the playoffs. It cost them. You know, their defense was an issue. Their defense was an issue last year. But hopefully they have upgraded, and I think they have upgraded that. They have definitely upgraded that. And hopefully, you know, and the thing is, they were young on defense. They were very young on defense last year. Excuse me.
Well,
but hopefully now.
I'll say this, and I can, in a way, couldn't agree more. The bottom line is, I mean, I'll say this about Haynesworth. To me, if you're the Patriots and you're Bill Belichick, you know, they had Randy Moss, and they took him on right after the Raiders situation where everyone said that Randy Moss was a dud. And if you remember, they said he was done. He was an attitude problem. I mean, they took a bit of a gamble on a guy with tremendous talent who helped them immensely, but ultimately who said what? Well, he never played for the Raiders, took time off. Basically, I mean, and but was a perennial all-pro. This is Albert Haynesworth. And I think here again, if you really look between the lines, if you read between the lines, there is no harm. I mean, if you're the Patriots, picking this guy up and seeing if you can make him work, or basically he will be a non-factor because Belichick is not going to be and have the situation in Denver because that's not his style. You know, his style will either be they'll cut him or they'll bench him, and he, you know, Belichick just won't answer the questions. I mean, he is very much in that Andy Reid mold where if he doesn't want to talk about things, he doesn't talk about them. So I think when you're the Patriots organization, I agree with you, a young defense that at times I think showed flashes of they can make some plays. They were basically young and they were immature. Here's a player, if they can get his head right, even if they forget about getting his head right, if they can get this guy to step out on the field and be Albert Haynesworth, just like they were somehow able to do with Randy Moss, who basically, you know, pretty much retired because he wasn't a Patriot anymore. I mean, sitting in press conferences reminiscing about his team, his former team, I think should say that they're able to, they have the track record to revitalize players. I think it was a great move. I think the Haynes was more so than the Ocho Cinco move, only because it can't hurt them. It can only help them. I do not believe, Paul, he can hurt them at all.
And they also bring in Andre Carter, a pass rushing DN. And I just think you look at the Patriots' defense, it was youth. I mean, there was a lot of youth there. But hopefully these guys grow up a little bit and these guys play. And I think they will. I think the Patriots, again, with Haynesworth, with Ocho Cinco, with the addition of an Andre Carter, I think this is going to be a better football team. And this, many people tend to forget this and keep forgetting this, but the team that has won the AFC East the last two seasons were not the Jets, but the New England Patriots. They were the team that has won the AFC East the last two seasons. A lot of people forget that. A lot of people forget that and get caught up in that Jets hype. But the New England Patriots, they have been the team that has won. They have won the AFC East two times in a row. So
right.
I just think right now the New England Patriots, I think they're the better team. And I think, again, they will win the AFC East like they won the last two seasons. I really, truly do believe that. And I look at the New England Patriots as a team, not necessarily to beat, but, they are the team to beat in the AFC. And I think at this point, anybody that says they know who's going to win what and who's going to win this division and that division, really, it's kind of hard to say who's going to win anything. I mean, it's kind of hard to get a gauge for some of these teams, especially with the lockout and everything. But we see some of these free agent moves and all that. But it's kind of hard to kind of get a gauge of what's going on with some of these teams. And I have a hard time understanding, you know, who's going to be this and who's going to be that. I really don't know at this point. But growing forward, I think we'll have a better idea. But anybody that says they know who's going to be the class of the league, I don't really think they know. And we'll see what happens going forward. Let's bring in now the defensive back for the Pittsburgh Steelers, Ryan Mundy. Ryan,
hello?
How are you, sir?
I'm
yeah,
good.
Ryan.
How you doing? Yeah.
Man, I'm doing well. And, Ryan, last night you played against the Washington Redskins. You guys lost 16-7, but the score is really not important in preseason. How would you rate your play and the play of your Steelers defense last night?
I really haven't had a chance to view the film, so I really couldn't give you an accurate number. I had some good plays out there, had some mental errors, but, you know, just shaking off the rust a little bit. I only had a week of practice, but, you know, no excuses. Anytime you put your feet on that grass and step inside the stadium, you want to give put your best foot forward. So that's always our goal.
Are you a little sore today, sir? First time hitting in a long time?
I am a little bit sore. I got a lot of good work in. Like I said, I was one of the guys who wasn't able to practice until a week after camp started. So I really only had a week of practice. So I think that work last night, getting that extra work in, was good for my conditioning, good for, you know, me getting those mental reps out there. And it was just a good experience for me overall.
And Ryan, with the lockout going on, you missed the mini camps, you missed the OTAs. How different has this training camp been than in previous years?
It's pretty much been the same, to be honest. You know, with the new rules and everything, you know, you got mandatory days off and stuff like that. We do meet a little bit more, you know, to fill in for that practice time that we're missing out in. But, you know, our camp is pretty much the model of the NFL because, you know, we have a veteran team. We have guys that know how to practice and know how to work. So, you know, I think not too much has changed from our perspective as far as camp goes.
Well, Ryan, you used an interesting term, a model of the league. And how then has this offseason challenged, you know, especially like you said, you had to wait a week, all the players, even on Pittsburgh, coming in, and now you practice for a week in your first preseason game?
I'm sorry, I didn't catch the first part of that question.
how has the lockout affected just specifically the Steelers?
I think it's affected the rookies and the guys new to the system the most. I'm going into my fourth year with the Steelers, so you know, I'm very familiar and comfortable with the way that, you know, the organization runs, how the training camp runs, the playbook, everything involved with just being a professional football player for the Pittsburgh Steelers. So, but I think, you know, the guys that are new to the system, new to the NFL, those are the guys that are feeling it the worst. But I think they're doing a good job of adjusting. We got a good group of veterans on our team that are willing to help out anybody who's capable of helping us get to our goal.
And Ryan, these past few seasons, you played behind two very good safeties in Ryan Clark and Troy Polamalu. How have these two helped your career to this point?
Really just learning how to be a professional. You know, like you said, those are probably, in my opinion, the best safety combo in the NFL. So just learning from those guys, watching how they approach each and every game, not only on the field but off the field and in the class, in the meeting rooms, taking care of the bodies, and you know, even life outside of football. Those are just two great men, two great role models, and you know, great family men, great men of character and value. So, you know, just the overall experience of just knowing those two guys has definitely been a bonus and a great plus in my life.
We're talking to Ryan Mundy, safety for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Ryan, a lot of players have been going down with that Achilles injuries. How much of it is injury a concern to you as a player, being that the training camp has been so short, no mini camps, no OTAs? Is injury a concern to you?
No, not to me personally. You know, football is football, and injuries are a part of the game. You can't really attribute the increased amount of injuries due to the lockout. I wouldn't do that, you know, because guys are going to work out, and they're still going to make sure that they're in their best shape to be ready for a training camp in the season. So, you know, injuries are a part of football, and you got to take the good with the bad.
And, Ryan, I look at everything now, and you guys last season, you went to the Super Bowl, you ran into a hot Green Bay Packers team. Super Bowl is a Super Bowl, but how tough was that loss for you?
It's extremely tough, you know, because we're right there in front of our goal, what we have worked on since training camp and throughout the regular season and the postseason, and to have that opportunity not, you know, reach our goal is very heartbreaking and very frustrating, especially, you know, with the guys that we have in our locker room. We know that we were definitely capable of winning that game. We just came out on the wrong end. And then just to couple that with the fact that, you know, we really didn't have a chance to get together and go through OTAs, go through mini camp, and really first time really getting back together was training camp with that long layoff. It kind of left a sour taste in our mouth for a little bit. But, you know, I think we're ready to go for this year and make another run at it.
Is that you know, coming into the once the lockout was settled and getting right down to business, was that one of the first things that was really discussed in the locker room, you know, was the fact that, I mean, last year was a missed opportunity in a lot of people's opinions, because on paper the Steelers really looked like, you know, that they were going to be Super Bowl champions.
You know, that's something that, you know, guys I'm sure discussed on their own in the offseason. But, you know, this is a 2011 season, and our goal for the 2011 season is to get back to that game. You know, we can't really dwell on the past. We just have to learn from that game. And, you know, I'm sure, you know, especially our veteran players have done a great job of leading us and making sure that, you know, we're prepared for the 2011 season and hopefully getting back to that game.
And it is 2011, Ryan, and you guys have a new secondary coach, Steelers legend, Carnell Lake. Ryan, you're a Pittsburgh guy, so you know all about Carnell Lake. How excited are you to be learning from the great Carnell Lake?
It's a great opportunity, because I remember watching Carnell Lake when I was a kid, you know, being from Pittsburgh and growing up a Steelers fan. You know, I remember seeing number 37 out there making plays. So, you know, I'm very excited to have the opportunity to be coached by him and just learn as much as I can, and to help me improve my game and just be the best player that I can be.
And we talked about you being from Pittsburgh. How exciting is it for you to play in Pittsburgh and wear that black and yellow?
Well, that excitement wore off a long time ago. one of the first things that Coach Tomlin told me was, just because you're from Pittsburgh does not, you know, improve your chances or, you know, guarantee that you will make this team. So I kind of had to put that aside and put my head down and go to work. And, you know, I've been doing that ever since. But it's a great opportunity, you know, just to play in the NFL was my ultimate goal. But to have the chance to do it in front of my family and friends on a weekly basis is very special.
And now, you know, entering this season, it was a key point there. You say getting into the NFL, you wanted to make it. Now you're semi-established. I mean, certainly, and playing, like Paul said, with the players you're playing with, I'm sure you're looking for big things coming into this season.
Yeah, definitely. My goal is to always improve individually, take care of my business, and that ultimately helps the team take care of our business. You know, the goal is to improve every year. And, you know, something that Coach Thomas says that, you know, I really take heart to is, you know, what you did last year doesn't mean that, you know, that'll keep you here this year. So I just try to be conscious of that and always make sure that I'm doing the things necessary to really reach my ceiling, reach my potential, and just be the best football player that Ryan Mundy can be.
And Ryan, 2010, I mean, you played in some key situations. You started a couple ball games, and obviously you played a big role in special teams. But going into 2011, what does Ryan Mundy need to do to take that next step, and what has he done to take that next step?
I think what I need to do for the 2011 season is something that I'm really focusing on is just making that trigger. Somebody that I studied very much is Troy Polamalu and Ryan Clark. You know, those guys have almost a sixth sense being around the ball and taking that risk and being right. You know, that's the one thing. As a safety, you're the last line of defense. So if you take that risk and go after that ball, you know, try to make a play, you better be right, because if you don't, you know, that could be trouble for our defense. So, you know, that's something that I'm really conscious of and really something that I want to incorporate in my game. And that just comes with experience, film study, and just the willingness and being aggressive out there. And, you know, that's something that I'm going to focus on this preseason and especially in practice and as we finish up in training camp and hopefully, you know, make some plays out there.
And so right now, Ryan, I mean, you look at last season, you guys, Steelers, Ravens, I mean, a lot of talk has been going on between these two teams. You played against the Ravens a few times. Take us through a typical Ravens-Steelers ball game.
It's knockdown, drag them out for sure. You know, the ice bath is necessary. It's a must after those type of games. But, you know, we just try to go in and be as physical as possible. They know us. We know them. And, you know, there's really no surprises in those games. It just comes down to the one or two game-changing type plays that happen each time in that ball game. So, you know, we're looking for a good game. The first great way to start off the season. And, you know, hopefully we can come out with the W. But, you know, it's always a tough physical game.
And, Ryan, we're talking to Ryan Mundy, defensive back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Ryan, I was reading up on you, and I read something interesting. I mean, you transferred from the University of Michigan in your fourth year to West Virginia. Talk about that.
Well, it was just a situation and opportunity, really, that came up. I was in position to graduate at the University of Michigan with my degree in liberal arts, and there was a rule at the time that stated, you know, if an athlete had eligibility left and was in position to graduate, they could transfer to another institution and not have to sit out. And so, you know, I just took advantage of that rule, had a great year at West Virginia, and, you know, things worked out perfectly for me.
And definitely you're in the NFL, so everything has worked out perfectly for you, Ryan. And, Ryan, on this show, we like to play a game called Who's Better. I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
All right, we'll see, yeah.
Better city, Morgantown, West Virginia, or Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania?
Oh, that's easy. Pittsburgh, that's where I'm from. I thought you was going to make it hard and say Morgantown or Ann Arbor.
Oh, let's make it. Morgantown or Ann Arbor?
I'll plead the fifth. But I can't go wrong saying my hometown, though. Can't go wrong saying
definitely.
Hometown.
I mean, definitely. You can't go wrong with that. Better day of the week, Friday or Monday?
Monday, of course.
Better place to party, Morgantown, West Virginia, or Ann Arbor, Michigan?
Man. I mean, college is a great experience overall, and it's tough to compare the two because I was only at West Virginia for not even a year, maybe like 5 or 6 months. I was really there for the football season and that summer school, and that was kind of it. And I spent 4 years in Ann Arbor. So, you know, I guess I have to get an edge in Ann Arbor just because I was there for so much longer.
And, Ryan, last one, McDonald's or Burger King?
Five Guys.
Five
Ooh,
Guys.
Wow, look at that.
Look at
that,
Paul. I
haven't heard that.
I went to, you know what, Ryan? I've been to Five Guys, man, and I got to say, I was not impressed.
Wow.
I really wasn't impressed.
Oh, my goodness. Wow.
Yeah, talk to him, Ryan.
Yeah, that's
no, Five Guys is up and coming.
Yeah,
I don't
it
know,
is.
Man.
It is. Five Guys is great, though. I love Five Guys. I haven't had McDonald's forever.
Wow. Ryan, and a bonus question. We've been asking a lot of athletes this question. Jay-Z or Lil Wayne, who's better?
I'm a Jay-Z fan, so I got to go with Jay-Z.
There you go,
yeah,
Paul.
Yeah. There you go.
Yeah, and Ryan.
And see, the thing was, the funny thing with this whole thing, we've been asking a few players, and the rookies tend to go with Lil Wayne, and the older guys tend to go with Jay-Z, and you went right along with what I thought. You picked Jay-Z.
Yeah. I've been listening to Jay-Z for a while now, probably since middle school. So I'm a lifelong Jay fan.
And, Ryan, where can we find out information about you?
I'm launching a website here in the coming weeks. It's theryanmundycollective.com. So be on the lookout for that. In the next coming weeks. And my Twitter is rmundy29. And I have a Facebook fan page at Ryan Mundy on Facebook. So either one of those, I update those pretty daily, especially my Twitter. So, you know, and I'm very responsive. So any fans out there want to holler at me, just do so.
And no practice today for you?
Pardon me?
No practice today?
Nah, today's the players' day off, so I'm actually at my family reunion right now, about to get some good food and hang out a little bit.
Maybe you can send me a plate.
I'll try to save one.
Oh, appreciate that, Ryan. Ryan,
yep.
We wish you nothing but the best of luck in this 2011 season, sir. Appreciate you
stopping by.
Appreciate you spending some time with us on your day off, man. And
no problem. Let's
do it again.
All right. Thanks a lot, guys.
Take care.
All right, bro.
Ryan Mundy, defensive back for the Pittsburgh Steelers. And, you know, Ryan having a good time at his family reunion. I mean, I'm a little jealous. You know, he's probably eating some nice barbecue and having a good old time. I wonder if he's eating any Five Guys.
The greediness is amazing. I was about to congratulate you on what may be, Paul. I mean, you may win the Nobel Peace Prize. You know, for this discovery of Lil Wayne versus Jay-Z.
I'm asking it because it kind of is a thing with age, you know. I mean, like I said, the younger guys tend to say Lil Wayne, the older guys tend to say Jay-Z. So it's kind of interesting.
No,
kinda
I interesting agree. It very much is.
So, I mean, we'll see what happens going forward, but Ryan Mundy says Jay-Z. And so we'll go with Ryan Mundy and Jay-Z. And, you know, speaking of a legend, speaking of one of the greatest to ever do it, Tiger Woods. My man Tiger Woods. What is wrong with Tiger Woods? I mean, yesterday, did not make the cut at the PGA Championship, ended plus 10, spent a lot of time in the bunker. Not a good place to be if you're a golfer. But if you look at Tiger Woods, I mean, he's tried to change a lot of things. We heard the situation with his caddy. He changed that. He changed his management. He changed his swing. But still the same old result. And his last major win was the U.S. Open back in 2008. Who knew? Who knew? Tiger Woods is not Tiger Woods anymore. If you look at his 2010 play, 23 events worldwide, and he's only been in contention 3 times. Is it over for Tiger Woods?
Yeah.
Is it over? I look at this, not to interrupt you, Jeremy, but I look at this thing with Tiger Woods. What does it take for Tiger Woods to get back to his old self? Does he need to start cursing on the course a little more? Going back to his old ways? Does he need to go back to that old way, that old swagger that he had? Well, what does it take?
No, Paul, I mean, listen. First of all, you know, let's be real here and recognize that of all major sports, you know, while golf is not one of the 4 major ones, I mean, golf is it's a totally independent sport. I mean, it is you, it is yourself, and it is you. So there's no – Tiger doesn't get the opportunity coming off of that – it's all situational-based. I mean, the amount of pressure that is put on him, I just don't think people realize. Plus, he is injured. Plus, the guy is fighting an injury, you know, day in and day out, whether people like to understand this or not. You know, injuries affect players, but when you have 11 other guys like you do in football, I mean, basketball, there's 5, baseball, there's, you know, 20-some. When you have another guy, even if you're playing a little injured, that you can kind of depend on, well, your ability to be a little more or less effective but still be successful is there. When you're on a golf course and it's you and you're injured, oh, by the way, I mean, you basically were the most shamed athlete of recent memory. And the biggest thing people don't get is it's every week. I mean, last week, Paul, you right before the major, Charles Barkley comes out and rips him. I mean, Charles Barkley totally ripped him. Basically says that Tiger never doesn't talk to him, tried to blame him and Michael Jordan for his downfall. And the fact is that, you know, they were talking 2 or 3 times a week when he was whoring around, and now he hasn't spoke to him since. You know, Tiger leads that, whether people want to know it or not, and it doesn't. It's not that it's going to bother this guy, but it can't be what you want to read when you know. Plus, you're not the lead story about the PGA. You're the only story. They don't care. They want to see Tiger failing is just as good for this game as Tiger. He's been better for them when he hits 12 over and he doesn't make the cut than he is if he wins it. I look at this and I see a guy who, unfortunately, I think has proven one thing for people who don't know much about golf, which is it's a very sophisticated game. You're not able to step away from golf, even if you're as good as Tiger Woods, and be successful day in, day out, week in, week out, and expect that to translate to you being able to, walk on the course and you're going to win a major championship right after, and as well as right after a key injury. To me, and that's why I say, to me, I look at it, Paul, and I say constantly, the media isn't even giving this guy a chance to come back. He too, has never really, I think, picked the right time to come back. He comes back for 2 events, one of which is a major. These aren't easy tournaments. Now this is it for golf for 4 to 6 months, and unless he's going to go and get an exemption and play in Europe, you know, I think he kind of sets himself up to have problems in terms of the media that way. Go ahead.
I mean, I just think at this point, it just could be Tiger could actually just be done. And that's quite possible. He could just be done. I mean, he's fighting all these.
No. I mean,
you know, he's fought.
Paul.
He had the demons that he's fighting with the various women and all that. I mean, maybe Tiger just is done, and that's it.
Maybe he's just done.
He's trying to make all these changes, but you know, you like you said, you cut off Barkley, you cut off Jordan, and maybe you know if you look at that. I mean, both of those guys, Jordan and Barkley. Aren't the figures of, you know, they're not the guys that you want to hang out with, I think, if you want to live a good married life, a good married clean life. I mean, those guys, fair or unfair, have done some things in their life and haven't been the best husbands in their life and so on and so forth. So, I mean, maybe this is a good thing, but, you know, maybe we teach us it's taken some time to for everything to get adjusted, for everything to get right for Tiger. Maybe he has to, I don't know, but, I mean,
well,
it's
kind of
baffling.
I think his career, he'll come back. I mean, will he ever be Tiger Woods again? I think there is a case for somebody, I mean, someone could say, no, maybe not. But is Tiger Woods going to win another Masters before he retires? Absolutely. You know, is Tiger Woods, though, I mean, showing you that it's a project? Yes. You know, and that's what I say. I see what you're saying, and I'm telling you, to me, we'll see. This is something you and I can follow, certainly, in golf's off season, but he's not done. He's stupid. Having affairs and getting caught proved my point, didn't it?
Well, and we'll see what happens going forward with Tiger Woods. And let's bring in now one of the stars of Ultimate Merger. I can't even talk. Let's bring in one of the stars of Ultimate Merger 2, MMA fighter, Mr. Kevin Casey. Kevin, how are you, sir?
Excellent, excellent. Thank you for having me on the show, Paul.
Thanks for coming on, Kevin. And Kevin, first off, I got to ask you, man, how did you get on Ultimate Merger 2?
Well, someone contacted my publicist, and, you know, I had just competed in Saudi Arabia in a jiu-jitsu tournament. I was back home for maybe 2 days, and my publicist threw the option out there, and, you know, I took it and ran with it.
And you knew going into this thing that it was you guys were going to be fighting for the love of Takara, the lovely Takara, mind you?
Yes, sir. I definitely was aware of the situation. And, you know, I thought of it as an opportunity to showcase, you know, different elements of my personality and not just, you know, the aspects of fighting, which people are accustomed to seeing me, you know, showcase. So I was up for the challenge.
And is Takara the type of woman that Kevin Casey usually goes for?
You know what? Takara has everything. She has the body. She has the attitude. And, you know, she's definitely the type of woman that I would go for, yes.
And so, on a scale of 1 to 10, looking at the lovely, the beautiful Takara, what would you give Takara on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'd give her an 11.
And why the 11? So you go
you know
off
what?
The chart.
I respect Takara. I respect her journey. I respect the fact that, you know, she's going through some adversities, you know, being a plus-size model, and, you know, having a lot of people doubt her, and regardless of, you know, what people had envisioned for her, she went out there and she strove and she's successful. And that's something I admire in her personality. That's something that I see, you know, I go through in my own life. So she definitely is an example of a good woman.
We're talking to Kevin Casey, mixed martial arts star, and one of the stars of Donald Trump's Ultimate Merger, which airs on TV1 each and every Thursday, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock
yes,
Pacific,
sir.
For you guys on the West Coast. And Kevin, what kind of guy are you? I mean, what kind of guy are you? What do you bring to the table here?
Well, I look at myself as someone who's very determined, very focused. I'm sincere. You know, I'm very passionate about anything that I do in my life, you know, and, you know, any person that is involved with me will feel that energy. And, you know, I can definitely be the driving force for any of my endeavors and anyone else's endeavors who choose to work with me. So, you know, that's a lot of the elements that I believe that I have that set me aside from a lot of different people.
And you're talking about a lot of different people, and those a lot of different people are the people on the show that you're fighting for, fighting with to get Takara. And I'm looking at some of the guys. Have you bonded with any of these guys?
Yeah, I definitely have made some good friendships. You know, all those cats are stand up dudes, and you know everybody is very respectful. You know, we all were there for one woman, but we for the most part we kept it a gentleman's game.
Right. And, you know, you had the situation with Takara. Takara brought in Harvey Walden to kind of help her in this process. You and Harvey, you know, you guys kind of went back and forth, had some issues. Talk about that.
You know what, Harvey came in, you know, from the perspective of the concerned brother. You know, at the same time, you know, whenever I'm dealing with a woman, I don't want to have to answer to anybody in my relationship. So that was something that, you know, I had to figure out really quickly if that is what she wanted me to do. Because if that was the case, then I was going from day one. So, you know, she kind of put Harvey in his place, and Harvey eventually warmed up and, you know, gave me the respect I deserve.
And Harvey can be an intimidating cat. I mean, were you intimidated by him at all?
Definitely not intimidated. You know, I look at Harvey as like a big brother type of figure. You know, he's a man
right.
out here who holds status, and you know, he commands respect. And you know, I just wanted to meet him on an equal playing ground, and you know, not put myself, you know, above him or underneath him.
And last week, a lot of crazy stuff happened last week. You had the situation with Eric calling women out of their names and being a part of some kind of business venture. Were you surprised by that?
Definitely. You know, it took us by surprise. You know, Eric is a good cat at heart, you know, but we had to question his judgment, you know, when he was on camera and he was being vocal about some things that, you know, none of us, you know, probably do or would be vocal about, so. After you know, take a step back and reassess, you know, my judgment of his character.
And I know the pictures were blurred out, but what did those pictures look like?
Man, you know, from my perspective, originally it appeared, you know what I'm saying, it appeared to be as if he was in the photo with someone else, but, you know, I guess I was wrong, and he had some individual photographs of himself posing in some, you know, I would say awkward positions.
Mm-hmm. and do you think, I mean, the way some of you guys acted, is it player hating? Were you guys player hating on some level?
You know what? There's different terminologies for what was going on. But what I would say is, you know, at any point in the house, if you showed any weakness, everyone was there to capitalize on that weakness and get one man closer to leaving out that door. So, you know, although we're all respectful and although we're all, you know, there as gentlemen, at the end of the day, we're trying to knock people out the park.
So it was gamesmanship.
Yes, sir. At its finest.
We're talking to Kevin Casey, one of the stars of Donald Trump's Ultimate Merger 2, which airs on TV1, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock
yes, sir.
Pacific. Each and every Thursday. And Kevin, you know, you're on the show, so you're probably getting a lot of publicity from that. Have you been receiving a lot of attention from the ladies from this show and from your appearance on The Ultimate Merger too?
I definitely have been receiving more attention from the ladies. And, you know, at a certain point, it's a little bit uncomfortable because, you know, that, you know, I've never had a problem with the ladies in my life, you know, up until this point at all. But, you know, now they're a little more aggressive with the situation, a little more. It's almost as if they're handing out resumes when they speak to me, you know, not to be, you know, sounding cocky or anything like that. But, yeah, it definitely, you know, adds a little bit more of an attraction, I would say.
Right. So you're doing background checks on some of these resumes?
You got to run the background checks, man, because you never know, I'm telling you. You never know. You got to be careful.
And Kevin, let's move to your MMA now. You're a mixed martial arts fighter. I mean, you fight for Strikeforce. And I look at your record, Kevin. You lost your first fight, but you won 3 fights in a row. I mean, what change did you make to kind of turn that thing around?
Well, the first fight that I fought was in a K-1 Heroes event in Japan, which is a, you know, very, very huge event. And one of my training partners originally was supposed to take the fight and receive the injury. And so I took the fight on 3 weeks' notice. So this was my first MMA event, and I believe it was in 2007. And, you know, I really wasn't prepared for that kind of situation, but the opportunity came. You know, they gave me a good payday, and, you know, I went out there and did my best. And, you know, after that, you know, once I joined the, you know, the actual elite level of being a professional, I changed my training, I changed, you know, my camp, and I really just turned everything on, and you know, different opportunities came my way. And, I ended up signing with Strike Force, which was a Showtime promotion. My first fight, it was excellent. I believe I defeated Chad Vance in a minute 41 seconds with a rear naked choke. The second fight that I had for Strike Force, they gave me a main event against Matt Lillen, who is Matt Lillen is one of the, you know, one of the legends of the sport. Greco-Roman Olympic silver medalist, I believe, in the Sydney Olympics. And I cut the weight. I cut weight to make my weight division. And I ended up not doing the process properly, and it just drained my body. So I had something called renal failure, which is when the kidneys shut down. And so after the first round, my body just tanked. And, you know, I took a lot of damage in the fight. And, you know, I had to just, you know, turn it in for that one. But now I'm back on. I'm ready to go. And I'm getting ready to get in another event and showcase my skills once again.
Are you looking to move up in weight?
No, definitely not. I'll stay at the same weight class. But, you know, I'm working with a different diet, a different training regimen, and just switching things around just to make that cut a little bit easier for myself.
And so talk about training for a mixed martial arts fight. How grueling is the training?
It's definitely you have to really put your body through a lot of different things to prepare yourself for that fast pace, because the rounds are typically 3-5 minute rounds. So all the athletes are going to go hard, and you're going to have to push yourself to your exhaustion point in that time limit there. So whether you are a stand-up fighter or a ground fighter, now everyone has to embody all elements of fighting. So, you know, traditionally, my background comes in Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You know, I'm a black belt under the Gracie family. But now, you know, I've been working my stand-up extensively for the last 2 years, working my kickboxing. I'm training with Andre Dida out of Black House, which is a huge fighting organization, a huge management company. They manage some of the top-level fighters in the game now.
Okay.
And, you know, also we're doing different kind of weight programs. So everything is just to really punish your body, just to be able to sustain that high pace that you're going to go at for 5 minutes.
And when do you see yourself getting back into the ring?
I'm looking for something around mid to late September.
Okay.
And I definitely will let you guys know, and would like to have the support of everyone, and like to have you know, everyone's eyes on the event, and show you guys where I'm at.
We're talking to Kevin Casey, one of the stars of Donald Trump's Ultimate Merger. Airs on TV One Thursdays, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific.
Yes,
and Kevin, we heard about Kevin Casey, the MMA fighter. We heard about Kevin Casey, the lover, the player, the bachelor. Let's talk about Kevin Casey, the hip hop artist. And talk about Kevin Casey, the hip hop artist. What is your style?
Well, I consider myself to be very versatile. You know, so I have a lot of different elements of my personality, and I try to express myself in many different genres of rapping. So sometimes I may make a song for the ladies. You know, sometimes I may make a song for, you know, the club. Sometimes I may make something that's a little more conscious and awareness of some of the things that are going on, you know, socially and in society. So, you know, I try not to label myself, because I feel like that, you know, that's where you put yourself into a box. And
right.
You know, I believe that my talents, you know, are a clear expression that, you know, I can do whatever I choose to do, and that's the same with anybody in their life. You know, we the only limitations that we have in life are the ones we put on ourselves. So I choose not to put limitations on myself or labels on myself.
And Kevin, we got a couple tracks here that we're going to play. The first track is Respect here. Talk about that song and kind of what it's about.
Respect really just came from you know, I mixed it to have a little more of a mainstream sound, something that would sound good on the radio, that would make people dance. But everything, you know, everything in life to me is about respect. A lot of issues that people have on the day-to-day, would go a lot different, you know, if everyone treated each other with respect. So, you know, I threw a little bit of the swag on there, but at the same time, there's some real positive message in respect. So respect is just something that is a little bit flashy, but at the same time, it has that core underlining, you know, that for the educated person to kind of catch on to, that it's all about respect.
Let's play a little bit of it. Respect, Kevin Casey.
You heard the whispers. You know the West Coast is back, and it's time for us to get it. Yeah. Get ready for the sicko. Jumping like I'm Hicko. Swear to tell the truth and keep it popping like it's Crisco. Beast out the squad, leave shaking like a disco. Taking over everything, acting like you didn't know. Here for the get dope. Haters better get low. Tossing for the cow on my waist like a hipso. Run for your life like the gremlins after Gizmo. 200 in the fast lane, pedal to the flip. No. Bass turned up and it's punching like a Klitschko. Don't want to see his bad side certified. One's words in the world can't be washed away. Here's the word to the wise, watch what you say. I navigate, infiltrate, global, I'm trying to dominate. So many I eliminate, don't want to see me elevate. Hesitate, never know, nigga, I forever go. Pour it in the paint to the Lord, say it's time to go.
That's respect, Kevin. And so, I mean, how long does it take you to put a song together?
Well, you know, I deal with different producers. My main producer is Angelo Costa. And, you know, once I get the track, you know, in my hand, I listen to the track. I try to feel the vibe of the track, and I try to let the music speak to me. And once I get that hook, that chorus down, it'll probably take me about a day and a half to finish the song.
And we got another song here, Forever. Quickly, what's Forever about, and what's your mission here with Forever?
Forever is more that's more from my heart. That's more of a heartfelt song about some of my struggle. So that's coming from, you know, the essence of Kevin Casey right there. You know, it's all heartfelt. It's no BS. Every line in it is truth, and you know, it's nothing. Nothing commercial about it at all, and it's just pure, just from the perspective of my struggle in trying to, you know, be who I believe I'm supposed to be.
Let's play Forever. Kevin Casey.
Go forever be a problem, forever stay late, forever gon' shine, gon' hate. I ain't never gon' stop, cause I ain't never lose faith. Even on the old life, trying to take my place. Go forever be a problem, forever be straight. I'm pushing, keeping it real. Ain't no way for me to stop until that ink's on the deal. Sweet smell of success, even though they talent and skill. Navigated.
Now, Kevin, where can we find your music?
You know what? Everything is unreleased. It's top secret right now. You know, I just finished the album. And, you know, I'm waiting for the right time to hit everybody with something hard at once. So, you know, the first and foremost, it's about getting the fight lined up and getting you guys, you know, that taste of, you know, my new skills that I've been working on. And from there, you know, I'm going to give you guys a dose of the music. So, you know, timing is everything.
And are you going to come to the ring with your music?
Definitely will do. Definitely will do, sir.
And Kevin, where can we find more information about you, your music and everything, your Twitter, your Facebook?
Yeah, check me out on Kevin Casey on the Twitter and Kevin K.O. Casey on the Facebook, or vice versa. It works the same. And just look out for me out there, please.
And everybody, look out for Kevin Casey. And look out for Kevin Casey on Donald Trump's The Ultimate Merger. Airs each and every Thursday, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. Make sure you check out King Kevin Casey on that show. And Kevin, real quickly now, sir, why should Takara choose you?
You know what? Because I believe that I could take her to a level that she's never been to before.
Okay. And I guess that's all that needs to be said.
Enough said.
Kevin, it was a pleasure, sir.
Thank you, Paul.
Good luck in the future,
man.
And And let's do this again.
Yes, sir.
King Kevin Casey, one of the stars of Donald Trump's The Ultimate Merger, airs each and every Thursday, 9 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. So make sure you check it out. Check it out, check it out. And Kevin Casey, he's vying for the love of the lovely, the beautiful, the talented Takara, and we'll see if he gets her. We shall see if he gets her. Interesting show, very interesting show, and we'll see if Kevin Casey will be the man and get Takara, the lovely, the beautiful, the talented Takara. We shall see, we shall see. We're going to be joined very shortly now by free agent linebacker Abdul Hodge, and right now Abdul is a free agent, and, you know, I mean, you look at it now with the lockout and everything, it had to be tough for a lot of the free agents. Had to be tough for a lot of the free agents for a lot of reasons. I mean, if you look at it, you had your free agency. It's kind of been – the whole process has kind of been taken away from you. And, you know, he's a guy, not the upper-tier free agent. So, you know, for those guys, it's got to be a little more difficult for guys like him. But he's going to talk about his situation now, and hopefully – he can catch on with a ball club at some point, but I don't think he'll have a problem, really, in reality, because of the injuries that we're seeing. There's a lot of injuries out there. A lot of guys getting hurt. So with that being said, with all these guys getting hurt, there are opportunities. There are opportunities for guys to have jobs. So maybe Abdul Hodge will get that opportunity when a certain guy goes down. Maybe he'll get that opportunity. Maybe he will get that opportunity. But, again, opportunity is out there. It's out there. It's out there for a lot of guys. There's a lot of opportunities out there. And there are going to be a lot of injuries. There's no doubt getting around that. There will be a lot of injuries. I know we have Ryan Mundy, and Ryan doesn't believe that there will be. And you cannot attribute the injuries to the lack of OTAs and minicamps and things of that nature. I don't know. I don't know what to say about that, but I know there will be a lot of injuries in this NFL season, and that's going to be a benefit for a lot of different people. Let's bring in now free agent linebacker Abdul Hodge. Abdul, how are you, sir?
Doing well, doing well.
And Abdul, you were released back in March by the Carolina Panthers. First off, were you surprised by that move?
No. I signed a one-year deal with the Carolina Panthers, so I knew this year I was going to be up for free agency.
Okay. And looking at it right now, you are a free agent. Did the lockout affect your situation at all, or do you think the lockout affected your situation?
Somewhat, just a little bit, because, you know, usually free agency started in March. But it just pushed things back a little bit. I wouldn't say it affected. We still have about four to five teams still interested. We just probably about 2 weeks into free agency. This offseason right here is different from any other off season, so it's been a little different, but we've been getting some good feedback and communication with several teams, so hopefully soon we'll sign the one.
And did the lockout make this whole, you know, being that you're a free agent, you had the lockout, did the lockout make that much more frustrating for a guy like you since you were a free agent?
The only thing that was more frustrating is not knowing where you're going to be, because like I say, most of the times, usually free agency starts, I believe, sometime in the middle of March, and by then most of the free agents be already signed. So being that the lockout was over, basically when camp was ready to start, a lot of teams just wanted to take a look at a lot of the young guys and sign a lot of the top free agents. So a lot of guys in the middle of the fold just have to be patient and just wait, and something will happen.
And has it hard, I mean, you know, this uncertain times for you, has it been hard for you to stay positive during this time?
No. See, I understand the uncertainty of it. The only thing that's more hard is when you have a family, like I have a daughter. So we're not sure where we're going to be. But right now we're together, we're training. But the most important thing that I try to focus on is just worry about myself, just continue to train, continue to stay focused. And, you know, guys are going down left and right, a lot of, you know, as we can see. So just be patient. I tell all the guys that just be patient, continue to work hard, so when the opportunity comes, you're ready and you're in shape and you're ready to go.
And then what have you done, being that there are no mini camps, no OTAs, and none of those type of things, what have you done to kind of stay ready and stay, ready for that call?
Well, this is my this will be my 6th year in the league. So I've been playing in the league for a while. I know the process. I know what teams are doing right now, and basically you got to be ready to play football. So a lot of things I'm doing on the field right now, I'm trying to emulate what teams and what the guys are doing on the field. And that's basically being in shape and being in condition. At the same time, I'm watching games and I'm going over mental notes, and so I can be able to start to think and see, you know, break down plays and break down formations, because you could gain a lot by just looking at the games.
Right. We're talking to free agent linebacker Abdul Hodge, and Abdul played last season with the Carolina Panthers. And Abdul, record-wise, the Carolina Panthers didn't do well last season, but how would you assess your play last season?
I played well. I came in the middle of the season. You know, I played behind John Beeson. Gave him some help at definitely gave him some help in boosting special teams. And, you know, I did the most I could do with the opportunity I was given.
Right. And you talked about the injuries because of this shortened training camp and because of this lockout. Are you surprised by the amount of injuries?
No, I'm not. because anytime you're taken away from a game of football, no matter how people don't understand, no matter how much you train, no matter how much you run, you drive, you lift in the off season, you can't replace that. The only thing you can do is the best way to get in shape is by playing football, and getting your body ready is by playing football. No one in the off season is hitting and pushing against guys. So once training camp starts, then you know some guys is on a different conditioning level. Some guys may not have been training as much as other guys, so it's going to be different. So you're going to expect injuries just. But what's been alarming to me has been the Achilles injuries, because I think there's about 10 of them already, which is that's a huge and major injury. So hopefully things will start to slow down and guys will get back into the use of get used to back playing, and their bodies will get acclimated.
And could this kind of be a blessing in disguise for you? Because now you have an opportunity to kind of get your body completely healed and get your body completely right for the NFL season.
Yeah, that's the way we're viewing it. Because I just look at it like this: the longer it takes me to sign to a team, the more time I'm going to have to continue to train my body and get into shape. That therefore, when the seasons come, I'm ready. Once I get into the camp, my legs will be on a totally different level than most of the guys that's already been there for two and a half weeks. So I definitely think it's a blessing in disguise to be able to continue to train. But if I had my choice, I'd be playing right now.
And do you have a preference in terms of a team?
I'll play for anybody, depending as long as the opportunity is right. I really don't have a preference. Every team has – I don't play for three teams. All teams have positive, all teams have negatives. As long as the opportunity is right, I'll play for anybody.
And, Abdul, I mean, you do a lot of great things in the community. You have your foundation, Hodge Helping Hands. Talk about what you guys are doing with that foundation.
Well, foundation, you know, we started when I was in when I first got into the NFL from South Florida, and I just felt like a lot was given to me growing up as a kid in the community, and it's just an opportunity for me, my wife, and my family to give back. So we got programs throughout the year. Like right now, we're getting ready to team up with the Block program, which is in Cincinnati, Ohio, which we provide the kids with book packs and school supplies, some of the basic necessities that they don't have. Then when Thanksgiving comes, we give out boxes. We team up with a local churches, and we help families that are in need of Thanksgiving meals. And then when Christmas comes, we also have what we do is 25 wishes. We got a program where we just give kids a letter and tell them, write us and tell us whatever they wish for Christmas, and we make it happen. So me and my wife, we're really passionate about giving back to the community. It's a way that, you know, we can help out, and because we've been blessed, you know, to be in the league for 5 or 6 years. So that's just what we want to do.
And where can we find information about this your foundation?
Oh, easy. Just go to hodgehelpinghands.org. There we have an email on this. We got a newsletter. We also have mentor programs for kids. Mine is called 18. You can go there. Your boys can sign up. I start a blog with them. We can talk about different issues that kids going through. My wife has her own mentorship program called KEYS, Knowledgeable Educated Young Sisters, where we just want to give back and give information to the youth. A lot of people out there, we feel as if are lost and just need someone to give them some guidance.
How important is it for you to be that mentor for young kids growing up?
It's very important, especially in urban community, because just like myself, I was raised without a father, just my mom, and most of the friends that was around me, most of my friends when I was young didn't have fathers anyways, so didn't have fathers as well. So a lot of times our mentorship or our knowledge came from the coaches and the other guys, the other male figures that was around. So knowing that, nothing has changed. As a matter of fact, the numbers have picked up a little bit. So you just want to be there to give people advice and just give them, let them know that just continue to, get your priorities right and make good choices in life and continue to work hard and good things will eventually happen.
And Abdul, on this show, we like to play a game called Who's Better? I'll give you two topics. You tell me who's better. You ready to play?
Yeah, let's go.
Better dreadlocks, Bob Marley or Abdul Hahn?
Bob Marley by far. He was the originator. I love his music. I got it on Pandora. The guy's a legend.
Better player, Abdul Hajj, number 55, or Abdul Hajj, number 52?
Gotta go 52. Anytime I put that 52, it was a different player. I was 55 for a short period of time, but I gotta go with 52. I've been wearing that number since high school, so I gotta go with it.
How important is the number to a player?
It's somewhat important, but it's not that important because I feel like the player. You make the number. For guys that's been playing with a certain amount of number, they may start to develop a sense of identity with a number. But at the end of the day, if they had to change, it wouldn't be that big a deal.
Last one, better school, Northern Iowa or the University of Iowa?
You know that answer. Of course.
Your brother goes to Northern Iowa.
Yeah. University of Iowa, man. University of Iowa is a great school. Education-wise, great. Football-wise, is great. Kurt Ferentz and this coaching staff there has been there for a long time, and they're not going anywhere. They're going to continue to win and put guys into the NFL. So, University of Iowa.
And one more time, Abdul, what is the website for your foundation?
www.hodgehelpinghands.org. Click on it, sign up, newsletters. Forums, get there.
Your Twitter handle?
Abdul_Hodge.
Okay.
@Abdul_Hodge.
So, guys, make sure you go to his foundation website. Make sure you go hit him up on Twitter. Abdul Hodge, we wish you nothing but the best of luck in this 2011 season, sir. Can't wait till you get on the roster, sir, and we would love to have you back in the future.
Thank you. Glad. Thanks for having me. And one opportunity away from greatness, man. Keep looking.
And I'll keep looking, and hopefully I'll find in this 2011 season Abdul Hajj on the roster. Take care, sir.
Thank you.
Abdul Hajj, free agent linebacker, and Abdul played for the Carolina Panthers last season. So, again, the free agency period, it's been short. It's been shortened. We're only 2 weeks into it. And so, guys may be on the street a little longer than they may have anticipated, but ultimately, with all these injuries that's happened in this league, guys will get an opportunity. Guys will get an opportunity, and I think it's very important, like you said, for guys to stay patient and stay in shape. Because you never know when that's going to be called. You never know when your name is going to be called. So you got to stay in shape and get yourself ready and get yourself right and stay ready and stay right because that opportunity may be coming sooner than you think, and it's going to come. It truly, truly is going to come, especially, again, with all these injuries that are going on right now in the National Football League. And speaking of the National Football League, Rex Grossman last night, the Washington Redskins beat the Pittsburgh Steelers. But Rex Grossman last night, the Rex Grossman who said that the Washington Redskins would win the NFC East, that Rex Grossman balled last night. He got it done last night, played some good football last night. I mean, he was shining. He was a shining star last night. 19 for 26, 207 yards and a touchdown last night against the Washington Redskins. as the Redskins beat the Pittsburgh Steelers 16-7. And you know, a lot of people may say Rex Grossman is crazy for saying that, and I'm one of them. I think he's a little crazy for that. I mean, Rex Grossman, first of all, and I said this before, I'll say it again, first of all, Rex Grossman, you may not even be a starter for the Washington Redskins. So who are you? But again, last night, preseason football, granted it's preseason football, granted it wasn't against the starters for most of the time, but 207 yards and a touchdown, it's impressive. It's impressive, and it's a start for Rex Grossman. It gives him confidence going forward. Who wins the starting job in Washington? Is it Rex Grossman? Is it John Beckham? You know, to Rex Grossman's credit, a lot of people tend to forget, but Rex Grossman did lead his Chicago Bears to the Super Bowl a few years back. He is a Super Bowl. He is a guy who's been to the Super Bowl. He is that guy. He has been to a Super Bowl. Now, do we get good Rex or bad Rex? And that was always the situation in Chicago. Good Rex, bad Rex. And then you always had that situation. What Rex Grossman would we see? What Rex Grossman would we see? And sometimes in Chicago we saw good, and sometimes we saw bad. And I would say most of the time we saw bad. But again, he did lead his team to a Super Bowl. He is a Super Bowl. He at least got to the Super Bowl back in 2006, where he threw 23 touchdowns, but he did throw 20 interceptions, over 3,000 yards passing. That was his best season in Chicago. But from there, it was downhill. I mean, he started all 16 games back in 2006, started only 8 games in 2007, started only 4 games in 2008 with Chicago, let go in Chicago, headed over to the Houston Texans, played 1 game for the Houston Texans, and now he's in Washington. Does Rex Grossman turn this thing around? Does he turn this thing around 30 years old? Is he in the prime of his career? Does Rex Grossman make some changes? Does Rex Grossman become good Rex during his time in Washington? We shall see. We shall see. Do we see good Rex? Do we see good Rex? We shall see. We shall see going forward. But, you know, he's talking. A lot of people are doing a lot of talking. This is talking time. This is the time where people do a lot of their talking. But at the end of the day, it's truly about what happens once we step on the field. But a lot of talk, a lot of talking, a lot of talking right now, a lot of interesting talk, a lot of interesting talking. You know, I mean, we'll see what happens moving forward. But Rex Grossman, I think he has to be, he definitely has to do some kind of psychological testing when you hear Rex Grossman talking about his ball club, the Washington Redskins, winning the NFC East. That means having a better record than the Philadelphia Eagles. That means having a better record than the Dallas Cowboys. That means having a better record than the New York Giants. And I look at that and I say, I don't know how truly possible that is. I don't know how truly possible that is. But we shall see moving forward and going forward. I don't see it. But again, who am I? Who am I? Stranger things have happened. And I said this before. I don't know how you truly can predict this thing. It's so up in the air, more so than any year. More so than any year, so up in the air. You just don't have a clue about who's going to win this and who's going to win that. You just don't have that clue right now. It's kind of hard to gauge. But we shall see moving forward in this 2011 NFL season. A lot of people are excited and happy to have football back. And football is back. It's only preseason football. I mean, and how much preseason football can you watch? Let's be honest. I mean, I can only do maybe a quarter. After the starters are out, I'm out. I mean, it's just not a good brand of football. I mean, half of the guys on, more than half of the guys on that's playing won't be there when real football starts. So we shall see moving forward what happens with all that. But, I mean, you look at preseason football, it is boring after the first quarter. It's not really watchable after the first quarter. We're going to bring in now very shortly a couple stars of Hillbilly Hand Fishing, which airs on Animal Planet, and Skipper Bivens and Jackson will stop on by. They're going to talk about hillbilly hand fishing and hand fishing. I look at hand fishing and I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is some crazy stuff. This is some crazy stuff, but you know, these guys talk, you know, and reading some of the articles about them and watching the show, they actually do it, and it's not a big deal for them. That's all they do is hand fish. So, I mean, it should be very interesting to get their thoughts on the show and their thoughts on hand fishing. Let's bring them in now, actually. We're now being joined by two of the stars of Hillbilly Fishing, Hand Fishing, excuse me, which airs on Animal Planet, Skipper Bivens and Jackson. How you guys doing?
Oh, we're doing good.
We're doing great this morning. How are you?
I'm doing well, doing well. And first off, guys, fishing is usually done with a rod. And I got to admit, when I first heard about this, it sounded a little crazy to me. How did you guys get started in hand fishing and noodling, as it's called?
Well, it was passed down from generation to generation. Our grandpas taught our dads, and our dads taught us, and we teach all of our kids and our friends.
Wow. And so that's how it got started? I mean, when you first got started, were you like, wow, this hurts?
Yeah, no two ways about it. When a big old fish rushes up and just attacks your foot and shakes viciously, yeah, the first thing it takes over is self-preservation. It's still hard not to want to get out of that hole and get out of harm's way. But the fish bites you very quickly, very aggressively, and then your buddy will go down and string him for you, or if you're, you know, you may have to string him yourself. But it is definitely an adrenaline junkie's rush.
And now, guys, I've been reading through some of the stuff, and I saw a quote that stood out to me. The quote is, if you ain't bleeding, you ain't hand fishing. So how much does it hurt?
It's not bad. I mean, this is really more of a scrape. It's not, you know, it don't bite down deep into you. It's just a scrape, an abrasion, and the adrenaline rush is so good. You know, when you catch a 50, 60-pound fish, it makes you feel unbelievable.
Wow.
It's the shock value. You know, people are so shocked when a fish actually runs up and bites them because it's just something you don't encounter every day unless you're down here in Cotton County with Jackson and myself.
and Skipper, one thing about you, man, you actually caught a 111-pound catfish by noodling. How'd you pull that one off?
Well, Jackson was actually there with me. We were fishing together on that particular day, and my wife and kids were there. But, yeah, that old big fish was really, really a big monster. But we're still looking to catch a fish bigger than that.
Wow. 111 pounds by feet and hand. That's amazing.
Yeah, it's something that we've just done. I don't ever remember not noodling. I caught my first fish when I was 4 years old, and our family has been doing it for generations and generations, and primarily we've just done it to put food on the table. But one day, I don't know, I felt put a spark in my mind and said, hey, I think people will pay good money to come do this. So we started up Big Fish Adventures, started taking out fish flickers and coaxing them into being the bait for us.
And you guys, you have done that, and you were a carpenter. You have quit your job. I mean, how lucrative is this?
Well, we're not getting rich at this point in time, but we're making a living.
Right, right. And it's obviously enough for you to quit your job, so you're doing okay.
Yeah, we're doing all right. You know, I mean, if you can take something that's been a passion your whole life and turn it into a business, hey, there's nothing else on earth I'd rather be doing than fishing anyways. So if I can take these city slickers out, take them on an adventure that will give them a memory that will last a lifetime, hey, that's an awesome job.
We're talking to Skipper Bivens and Jackson from the Animal Planet hit show Hillbilly Hand Fishing, which airs on Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific on Animal Planet. And guys, kind of take me through the process of catching a fish by noodling / hand fishing.
Well, you know, when the fish are nesting in these holes, and actually they will come take hold of you. We stick our feet in first, and they come and bite you on the foot. And you kind of bring him to the edge of the hole, and Skipper, one of us, will go down and actually string him. And then the fish is caught. And the quicker you can get him caught, the less cut up you're going to be.
Right. And this could be a very dangerous thing because you have other animals in the water. You got beavers, you got the snapping turtles, you got the snakes, you got the alligators. Have you guys had to deal with this at all?
We deal with it on a daily basis. I mean, each and every day we go out, there's always the threat of the beaver, the snakes, and the cottonmouth. Alligators are 100 miles or so down below us. We don't get into them often. There have been a few killed in this area in times past, but we've not run onto them lately. But that's really, really good adrenaline rush for the clients to think about. You know, they don't know what's under these murky waters. And when they come down here, they've never been off the sidewalks. They've never had mud between their toes, you know. So we get them in the water, take them down through there, address all of their fears. And when they catch a fish and conquer those fears, man, you ought to see them smiling from, I mean, their grin is from ear to ear.
And now on the show, Hillbilly Hand Fishing, you guys deal with people up north who have never done this before. What kind of reactions do you usually get?
Oh, we get screamers, criers, shakers.
This is one of the best jobs I've ever had. I haven't laughed this much in years. It's just unbelievable.
And now both of you guys are self-proclaimed hillbillies. How does one become a hillbilly?
Well, I wouldn't say that we're self-proclaimed. I've never proclaimed myself to be a hillbilly. The term doesn't bother me at all, though.
Right.
But
How would I go about being one?
Well, if you climb into the water and catch a catfish or the catfish catches you, that'd be a pretty good start, I'd think.
Okay. So maybe I need to do that if I want to become a hillbilly.
Oh, we'd love to take you. Come on down, and we cripple dog dare you.
And fellas, only 17 states have legalized noodling, and some call this practice cruelty to animals. How do you guys respond to something like that?
Oh, this is the most humane form of fishing in the world. We don't use a hook or a net or anything. We catch these fish with our bare hands and feet and handle them very gingerly and release 95% of all the fish that we catch. So we say that those people that might think this is might be a little bit cruel need to come on down and try their hand at hillbilly hand fishing.
And how about you, Jackson?
Oh, you guys, we release all these fish, and we were trying to keep everything so our kids and our grandchildren can keep this thing going, and it's been going on since the beginning of time, you know?
Most primitive form of fishing known to man. Get in there with your bare hands and feet, let a fish come attack you, conquer that fish, and then to turn around and release that fish, and that fish takes all of your troubles and worries and strife from the days behind and just swims away with them. It's a great feeling.
Now, do you guys fish with rods at all?
Oh, what do you call that, Jackson?
We call that senior citizen fishing. You know, when you get so old that you can't get in the water, that's when you sit on the bank.
Now, we don't like to hook them or trap them. We like to use our bare hands and feet and take the action to them.
We're talking to Skipper Bivens and Jackson, stars of Hillbilly Hand Fishing, which airs on Animal Planet Sundays, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. And, guys, what kind of stuff should we expect to see on this show?
Oh, you're going to see some real funny stuff. We've got some guys that come in from New York City, Nick and Tony, on the next episode, and I'm telling you, it's just a regular comedy team. Maybe likeness of Martin and Lewis.
Oh, you can't believe these people. These people are really scared, but they end up leaving with a sense of being like nothing. You know, they've never felt they've accomplished something.
Yeah.
Right.
But we definitely
how did
had
you guys...
screamers and criers.
And how did you guys get tapped for something like this?
Actually, I had started Big Fish Adventures about 2 years ago, and Half Yard Productions actually contacted us and shopped this thing through Animal Planet, and we did a little taster, a little pilot, and hey, here we are with the series.
And guys, we wish you guys nothing but the best of luck with this series. Again, it's Hillbilly Hand Fishing. It airs on Animal Planet Sundays at 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. It's Skipper Bivens. It's Jackson. These guys have a great time noodling slash hand fishing. And guys, nothing but the best of luck with this show, and I appreciate you guys stopping by.
Hey, we thank you very much, and we would also invite you to come down.
And maybe I'll take you up on that invitation.
You bet. You
I can't
bet.
Swim,
always
though, guys. I can't
yeah,
swim, so
down,
is that a problem?
Wait, do what?
I can't swim.
Oh, we can handle that. We can put you in water that's no deeper than hip deep, and you'll catch the biggest fish that you've ever caught in your life.
I may take you up on that offer.
Come on down. We triple dog dare you.
Guys, take care.
You're not a man to turn down a triple dog dare, are you?
Sometimes. Skipper Bivens, Jackson, again, make sure you check these guys out. Animal Planet, Sundays, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific. It was a pleasure, guys.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you. Skipper Bivens, Jackson, Hillbilly Hand Fishing. Again, make sure you check these guys out each and every Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific on Animal Planet. And hand fishing is an interesting thing, and a thing that I know those guys, they triple dog dared me to come on down, but yeah, I'll turn down a triple dog dare sometimes, and this might be one of those times where I turn down a triple dog dare. I'm not getting in any water to catch any fish with my bare hands. No, thank you. Not at all. It ain't happening. But I do appreciate, definitely do appreciate the offer. I definitely appreciate the offer from those guys. Last night now, the Hall of Fame, Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame, Springfield, Massachusetts, they enshrined a few guys, Chris Mullen, Dennis Rodman. You had Herb McGee from Philadelphia University, Philadelphia Textile, Arvydas Sabonis, Tex Winter, Artis Gilmore, Teresa Edwards, to name a few. Tara Vanderveer also was enshrined. And, you know, I watched that ceremony, but I watched it mainly to see what Dennis Rodman's speech would be like. And watching that speech and watching Dennis Rodman, it was a guy that was vulnerable, a guy that just laid it out and just told you how it was without, you know, it was straight with no chaser. It was no BS. He was just telling you how he was and what kind of person he was and what he has done throughout his life. And one thing that he said, he brought up a lot of things. He told everybody straight up he hasn't been a good husband, hasn't been a good father. And, you know, for many years, he said many times he's surprised he's even still here by some of the things he has done in his life. But and listening to this man, he was a guy that was vulnerable, and he just laid it out there. And it was beautiful in a lot of ways. It was beautiful. He was very emotional throughout the whole situation, throughout the whole speech. He was presented by Phil Jackson. And you know, throughout the whole thing, you got the sense that maybe he wanted to just run away and just take a quick step back and let Phil Jackson start talking. Because that's how emotional he was last night. And he had an interesting outfit, but he had a Dennis Rodman type of outfit, you know, the outfit that he normally always wears and normally always brings to the table each and every time. Dennis Rodman's style is a little different than the next man. And, you know, he talked about his four guys who kind of have been his mentor. He talked about his father, who had 47 kids, I believe, and how he really didn't have a relation with his father. But four mentors in his life was Phil Jackson, Chuck Daly, Lakers owner Jerry Bush, and James Rich, a friend of the family, a guy who took Rodman in after he was thrown out of his house by his mother. He talked about his mother, and, you know, he talked about her situation and their situation, talked about how at times he wasn't a good son to his mother. And the guy was just, you know, he really just laid it out there, and he wished, you got the sense that if he could take some things back, he would. And I think the one thing that was kind of telling, and the one thing that he really talked about a lot was in terms of being a father, not being a good father, not being a good husband to his wife, and not being a good father to his kids. I mean, the guy just, you look at Dennis Rodman, he was always out there partying, always having a good time, and I guess there's a price to pay for partying and having a good time when you do it just a little too much, and Dennis Rodman did it just a little too much throughout his life. And again, he said his wife has been the mother and the father to his kids. She's been the mother and the father while he's been out, you know, doing what Dennis Rodman has done throughout his whole life. And you got the sense, again, with the guy that, you know, he knows that he's not been the perfect person. He knows that there's some things in his life he needs to change, and there's things in life that I got the sense that he likes to change. And you hope that Dennis Rodman does change those things. You hope that he changes those things. Because, again, he's a guy now who will be immortalized now as a Hall of Famer, Naismith Hall of Famer. And so it's a beautiful thing for Dennis Rodman to be in the Hall of Fame. The guy played hard. He played hard. He said last night, I didn't play for the money. I didn't play to be famous. What you see here is most just an illusion that I love to just be an individual that's very colorful. So obviously he loves to be colorful. He loves to be colorful, and he said again, I love just to be an individual that's very colorful. And color, you can talk about his hair when it comes to color. For many years he was blonde, he was blue, he was red, he was green, he was polka dots, he was all these different hairstyles. It got to a point where you always wondered, I wonder what hairstyle Dennis Rodman will have this week or next week or the following week or next game or this game or that game. You wonder what he was going to wear and what kind of hairstyle he was going to have. And he told a funny story when he first signed with the Chicago Bulls, first became a Chicago Bull. He was told that he had to apologize to Scottie Pippen, and he had, you know, those two had the situation when Rodman was a Piston, and Pippen, of course, was a Bull, and Rodman gave a cheap shot to Scottie Pippen, and but he apologized, and the rest became history. 3 straight titles, and the rest is history for Dennis Rodman as a Chicago Bull. And Dennis Rodman, again, you hope the guy turns some things around. You hope the guy gets his thing right, get his mind right, get everything right. You just hope that he gets everything right moving forward as a man, because his basketball days are long over. He's an older man now, you know, so now it's time for Dennis Rodman to kind of do things the right way and live the right way. I mean, it's time for him to do that. It's time for him to do that. And, again, very vulnerable last night, and he's a very emotional guy. Rodman's always been an emotional guy. He's always been a guy who is quick to cry. He's always been that type of guy. And you look at him, and again, you just hope that he changes things around. And hopefully, moving forward, Dennis Rodman will be the man that he wants to be. Be the person that he wants to be and do all the right things in his life. And again, he said it. If anyone, he's quoted saying in his speech, if anyone asks if I have any regrets in your career being a basketball player, I say I have one regret. I wish I was a better father, and that was big. He wished he was a better father. And Dennis has time. He has an opportunity. He has a chance. And he has a couple of young kids and an older daughter. So he has an opportunity and a chance to do the right things and to become that better father that he wants to be. Hopefully, he can be that person. We want to thank Pittsburgh defensive back Ryan Mundy for stopping by. Make sure you hit Ryan Mundy on Twitter, rmundy29. Also, we want to thank Abdul Hodge, free agent linebacker. Make sure you support Abdul Hodge, his foundation, and make sure you support him on Twitter, @Abdul_Hodge. And there you can find out about his foundation and some of the great things he's doing in his community. Also, make sure you support Kevin Casey, one of the stars of Ultimate Merger 2. That show airs each and every Thursday on TV1, 9 o'clock Eastern, 6 o'clock Pacific, and make sure you support his music and all that he's doing. And also, make sure you check out Hillbilly Hand Fishing, Skipper Bivens, and Jackson each and every Sunday, 10 o'clock Eastern and Pacific on Animal Planet. You can listen to this show and other shows at blogradio.com/pcan. Make sure you follow the show on Twitter at GoForAgain. And again, make sure you listen to this show and other shows at blogtalkradio.com/pcan. For Jeremy Espy, this is Paul Gant. See you later. Bye.